You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Final hour this Wednesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. I have rehashed, put into proper perspective, hopefully, context, my tweet yesterday about October 10th for the Big Ten. That is the date. That would be sort of the drop-dead date, from what I'm told, of trying to get a season in and still be able to play for a national championship. That's what I was told. So I think the odds are still very long, trying to get everybody together in a five-week span to be able to start college football in the Big Ten. I was told the president and his conversation with the commissioner of the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, and his subsequent tweet had an impact. I don't know how much of an impact, just telling you what I was told, but my source did say this morning, it's still a mess because you really don't have the leadership there. Now you have to have another vote with the presidents. And how will those presidents vote? I was told there's probably going to be at least three schools, maybe four, that will vote to not play football in the Big Ten. If they do have a vote, once again, if there is a vote, there's a lot of ifs attached to this. And please don't leave the ifs out, because people did yesterday saying, oh, you're saying that the Big Ten's coming back on the 10th of October. If they have updated safety procedures and measures is what I was told. If they're able to do that. I don't know if they can, but if I get information, I'll let you know, but I just want to make sure it's put in the proper context. I'm not saying they are playing. I'm saying if they do play, that is the target date. That is the drop-dead date if you can still get a season in and qualify for the national championship. I was told spring football is not an option. They're going to make it an option, but it's not an option because they know you're going to have watered-down spring practice, basically, and you're going to have a lot of players who are not going to play. And maybe nothing is changing. So health-wise, if nothing changes, if you're not playing in the fall, you're not going to be playing in the spring. But that's just some of the information that I got from yesterday and this morning. Celtics go up 2-0 on the Raptors. We'll check in with the Celtics. The White Mamba, Brian Scalabrine, will join us coming up. Nuggets beat the Jazz, and they get the Clippers coming up on Thursday. It's Thunder, Rockets, Game 7. Lakers get the winner. And the Heat and the Bucks, Game 2, coming up tonight. I don't know if you saw this story, but I've been following it because it is going to be a big story. The Miami Dolphins are going to have Ryan Fitzpatrick start the season opener. That's at New England. And Brian Flores, the former Patriots assistant coach who is now the Dolphins head coach, acknowledged that the hip injury that ended Tua's career at Alabama played a part in deciding whether or not Fitzpatrick or Tua would be the starter. And in a conversation with the Sun Sentinel, Brian Flores says, it's definitely part of the conversation. We're at 10 months. It was a pretty serious injury. He looks good, though. He's healthy. He's moving around to his right and his left. But yes, that's part of the conversation. And that's what I've said all along about Tua. I'm not in a rush. I don't need to be in a rush. You might make the playoffs this year. You might be surprising teams as you did at the end of last season. But I would rather look at the long-term play here. Not, I got to get Tua out there. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a great placeholder here. He's going to be great with Tua, helping him with the start of his career. The one thing that I want to make sure is, when Tua is out there, he's not thinking about his health. He's not thinking about his hip. He's not thinking about any other injuries that he's had. Just go out there and play and be competent. And he might be confident from day one. But I want to make sure. I was told it was a 12-month rehab. Now, we're at 10 months. But, you know, he's, what, 21 years of age. So, able to bounce back and get ready to play in the NFL. But Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to get the start. Alvin Kamara and the New Orleans Saints. I don't know if there's going to be a holdout. But they're trying to get on the same page as far as his money. Can he get Christian McCaffrey-type money? Because if you look at the start of his career, now he was injured last year, but you can put those numbers up with Christian McCaffrey, with what he did those first couple of years in New Orleans. And the value of Alvin Kamara, without Mark Ingram there, it's Alvin Kamara. And this is the Super Bowl or bust year with Drew Brees probably playing in his last year. But Alvin Kamara wants, I think, $15 million a year. I think McCaffrey got $16 million a year. And I don't know if we're headed towards a showdown there. I saw where the great NFL reporter Tom Pelissero said Alvin Kamara will be back with the Saints. They're built to win now. Probably don't want to trade him for picks. That was what came out yesterday. All of a sudden, they're saying, hey, what can you get for Alvin Kamara? I'm like, wow, that escalated quickly. Kamara intends to show up for practice. He missed several days following an epidural shot in his back last Thursday. The sides weren't that far apart on an extension before things went sideways. That didn't stop CBS Sports from saying, let's look at the teams that would be interested in Alvin Kamara. It's like the story that I saw yesterday where I said, wait, this is going to happen. If the Bucs bow out, if they go down 2-0, then you're going to start to see these stories of where is the Greek Freak going to land? Of course, we can't wait, and we got to get ahead of everybody. And I saw a story where keep an eye on the Miami Heat. If the Heat knock out the Bucks, then, of course, the Miami Heat would be the great place, the landing spot for the Greek Freak if he leaves Milwaukee. I hope he stays in Milwaukee. But I just keep – I'm trying to inform you that get ready for that. There's going to be a tidal wave of Lakers question mark, Knicks question mark. Like, whatever can get – whatever's clickbait, that's what you're going to get with the Greek Freak. Yes, McLovin.
By the way, about 36 players have been linked to the Knicks for next year.
I know.
He's a Leon Rose.
Yeah, we're going to find out if that's his value, that, hey, can you get players to go there? Because when's the last time they got a truly great player who wanted to go there? Been a while. Yes, Paulie.
I was pondering your question there. That may take us a while. I was thinking, like, tonight, if it's a one-point game either way, Thunder-Rockets, the Rockets coach is in and out. Like Mike Conley's shot, they advance or they die. Is his career that tenuous tonight? You talk about jumping to conclusions. If they lose that game by even 1 point tonight, is the entire post game about D'Antoni?
Yes. Yeah, I think if they don't advance to the Western Conference Finals, I would be surprised. And I don't have any information. It's just me looking at the situation. He doesn't have a contract here. And if you're not going to get past this point here with those players, I go back to looking at Oklahoma City. And here's Oklahoma City going toe-to-toe with the Rockets. And you wouldn't expect that because Oklahoma City was in a rebuild, or at least that was the impression. They were in a rebuild. And then you start to think back when Kevin Durant was there, Russell Westbrook was there, and James Harden was there, all with Oklahoma City. Yeah, McLovin.
If the Rockets lose, is Daryl Morey, the GM, and the analytics in trouble? Is this going to be the death of analytics?
Oh, man, that'll be a sad day for you.
I know. The nerds are running the league right now.
I don't know what Daryl Morey's future would be. You certainly had the tweet that he had about Hong Kong at the beginning of the season that's going to cost the NBA billions of dollars. Daryl Morey is the most expensive GM in the history of the NBA. Oh, man. What a crazy year. Like you start the year where you're over there, and all of a sudden he tweets, free Hong Kong. And all of a sudden you go, uh-oh, China is just backed out of carrying NBA games, and that is going to be costly. I also think that you're going to see the owners maybe opting out of this collective bargaining agreement, trying to do a reset with the salary cap and all the money they lost. You know, just something to keep an eye on here. But I think Mike D'Antoni got to win tonight. Have to win, it feels like, to keep that job. We'll check in with the Celtics coming up, Brian Scalabrine. Kemba Walker making the most of his first trip to the second round as the Celtics go up 2-0. Marcus Smart. Who knew? Marcus Smart, dare I say, in fuego. He finished 6 of 11 from three-point range. He was 5 of 9 in game one. So he's 11 for 20 in the series from three-point range. That's not the guy that I would want shooting a three, but watching last night, he doesn't lack confidence. And there are certain shooters who should lack confidence. There are guys that you want to have more confidence, but Marcus Smart looks like a defensive back who just wandered onto the court, put on a uniform, taking some jumpers there. Yes, McLovin.
We're working on a new poll.
Whoa, okay.
It's a serious left turn.
Well, we're famous for that.
Yeah. I'm going to let actually Paulie present it because he came up with it. We're having trouble narrowing down to the choices, though.
Okay. All right.
So Keanu Reeves, he's 55. It's his birthday. He's got a long career. Whose acting career would you want? We've put together these three names. Keanu Reeves, Liam Neeson, Bruce Willis. All have had major success. All have been transitioned into action stars. All have had some pretty big time films.
It's an obvious answer.
What? Ooh.
It's obvious. It's Keanu Reeves.
Liam Neeson was Schindler's List?
Oh, Keanu Reeves. He's John Wick, and they're bringing back The Matrix again. And, of course, Point Break, one of the great movies of all time. Johnny Utah.
Yes. Bruce Willis is in Die Hard.
Yeah, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, but he's not in anything now. Like, Keanu Reeves is killing it now. John Wick? And you're going to go Matrix again? Come on. There's no.
I thought you were going to say Bruce Willis.
What did
Pulp
I?
Fiction, Sixth Sense.
No, great career, but Keanu Reeves is killing it now. Bruce has a great scrapbook, but Keanu Reeves, he's still moving forward.
But if you're trying to cast a snowplow driver bent on revenge.
Oh, Liam Neeson. Yes, Todd.
I will hunt you down. I will find you, and I will kill you.
I thought Bruce Willis for sure is what you were going to pick. McClane? Detective McClane? John McClane? That was huge.
John McClane.
That was a great character. I love those Die Hard movies.
Yes, boy.
I've seen that movie, Cold Pursuit, the Keanu Reeves, or the Liam Neeson snowplow movie. It's sneaky good. It's it's well made. It's like a good movie in a weird way.
I watched it.
It's the best snowplow hitman movie of all time.
I'm going to side with you on that. Thanks. Yes, Seton.
I have Liam Neeson total box office worldwide.
Okay.
There's a lot of people who have made a lot of money.
Yes.
Jeepers, creepers. Yes. I have him at over $5 billion.
His movies have made over $5 billion.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you check what I've made with the Sandler movies at the box office? Seton, it's not funny. Todd,
it was a little funny.
No, it's not funny.
Worth checking. But...
No, I'm just like the guy at the city council meeting talking about boneless chicken wings.
Right, let the man talk.
I'm being serious here.
Keanu Reeves is at just about $6 billion.
That's it?
Yeah.
For The Matrix?
That can't be right.
Yes, Todd.
What about the Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Willis, that Hard Rock triumvirate that they made a few bucks outside of movies on top of all his movie and TV stuff?
How's Planet Hollywood doing there?
Oh, it was Planet Hollywood.
Yeah, it wasn't even Hard Rock.
It wasn't. But that was that's a big group there. They got some good cash there.
I went to the Hard Rock Cafe. It's on 57th in New York. When I first got to New York, and I was such a loser because I couldn't get a date, and I would sit at the bar at the Hard Rock Cafe, and I'd get there around 7 o'clock. Like nothing gets done at 7 o'clock in New York, but I would go at 7. And just sit around and, have my cologne on, hair parted, looking good. And it was so sad. It was. Just a sad, sad man sitting there at the bar. Alone with my $6 rolling rock. Oh. All right. So that's the poll question we're going with?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's Keanu Reeves. Absolutely. Yes, McLevin.
Yeah, I was looking up Keanu Reeves' award history. Not a lot of Oscars, but a lot of MTV awards.
Okay, what's Bruce Willis won?
He's probably gotten nominated. Sixth Sense, maybe? I don't know.
Well, Haley Joel Osment got absolutely robbed by the Academy that year.
Well, Liam is going to pull out Schindler's List. So we almost have to take that out of the list because it's so uncharacteristic of every other movie he's been in.
I thought Ralph Fiennes was better than Liam Neeson in Schindler's List. I thought Ralph Fiennes had a more complex character.
He might have won for supporting.
Yeah,
we'll double check that.
He was great. Speaking of which, I was watching Made in Manhattan with.
Don't admit that. Come on.
No, that's a good one.
With Jennifer Lopez.
You got to run this stuff by me.
Sorry. And Ralph Fiennes.
I thought you were going to say In Bruges.
No. It was on last night, I think, or night before. And I go, nope, not clicking on In Bruges. Yes, McLean.
How to Lose Your Guy in 10 Days is on a loop on cable right now. Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been in a few those rom-coms or whatever, and none of them good. You know what? Midnight in Paris is a great movie. The Woody Allen.
Owen Wilson.
That's a great movie. That holds up. Great movie. It's really funny, clever. And the scenery's great. And you got all these literary figures in there. Hemingway's in there. He wants to fight everybody. Midnight in Paris it's good. Yes, McLean.
I saw In Bruges was on last night, too. It was going to text the gang to see if we all were going to watch it together. What's the etiquette on that? Is that a movie?
You can, but it's not any good.
Ah, gee.
It's not.
Brendan Gleeson's awesome.
I like Brendan Gleeson, but I didn't like In Bruges. You know what I think it is? I think the title I have a problem with.
I don't think you made it to the end of the movie.
I did. Guy falls out of the tower.
You did. You watched it.
I did watch it. And that made me dislike it even more.
Oh, no.
Yes. Let me get to Kevin in St. Louis, and then we'll take a break. We'll check in with Brian Scalabrine, who covers the Celtics, the White Mamba. Good morning, Kevin. How are you today?
Hey, bud. Good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, good call out on Keanu Reeves. I definitely agree with what your comments are. Talking about college football, mm-hmm. I'm kind of hoping that, based on the fact some of the small schools are going to be playing college football this fall, I wonder if some of those games are going to bring the big boys back for consideration. As an example, your and my EKU Colonels are playing Marshall and WVU the next two weekends on the mothership.
Yeah.
And I wonder if fans are going to want to watch football somewhere. I just wonder if you think that that's going to bring some of the big boys back to the table. Thoughts?
Well, I thought about that on Saturday night. Thanks for the phone call, Kevin. When Austin Peay was playing Central Arkansas. And I thought, if I'm a Big Ten fan or a player or a coach, athletic director, and I'm going, they're playing, but we're not. I watched high school football over the weekend. In fact, I think there was a matchup between Pickerington. There are two teams from Pickerington outside of Columbus, and they're rivals, and they're, you know, got a lot of Division I players there, and they're playing. St. X in Cincinnati went to Indianapolis to play a game. And you start to see this and you're going, okay, high school can pull this off. Why can't we? And with all the resources the Big Ten has, the money that you have, and the power players there, and now you have the president involved, I don't know if it's a perfect storm or not. But I do think that there's some really tough decisions that need to be made in the next couple of weeks. Probably even less than that. Because if you're going to try to get on the field and play October 10th. You got to have some answers here in the next couple of days. More phone calls coming up. Reggie Miller is going to. When's Reggie joining us, Tom?
Either tomorrow or Friday. They're finalizing his schedule, and it will definitely be in the next day or two. Well, the weekend's coming up after that, so it's got to be in the next day.
Thank you, Todd. And Michael Wilbon, I think, is going to stop by as well. Yes, McLevin, you have a question?
Well, can Reggie, I mean, what time does he wake up in his Wendy's? I'm confused.
The Wendy's commercials with Reggie Miller.
It's everywhere.
I know.
Reggie's on my TV 24/7.
Yeah, Reggie, now big actor there.
Could he get the Danettes in there somehow, maybe?
I don't know. Didn't Darius Rucker do the Burger King commercial?
Yeah.
That was not a good commercial. That was not a good idea.
He said, though, the check was a great idea.
Yeah, I know. I told him. I told him that congrats on that. A great paycheck, but that's not a great career move. The outfit that he was wearing. That was not good. Yes, McLovin.
You've been in some huge commercials. Who are you to talk?
But I didn't, you know, get dressed up like that.
You were, but you've done huge campaigns.
You were a thespian with TGI Fridays.
I was. That was a great commercial.
The sauce in the hair was fun.
Yes, that little guy where I put sauce in his hair. I wanted to do a version of now he's grown up, and then I get to see him, and then he does it to me. Unless he doesn't have hair, and then it could be like Fritzy, and then it would be an awkward
it's not necessary,
CGI though. Friday commercial. All right, let me take a break. I got to get to Brian Scalabrine to talk about my Boston Celtics here all of a sudden. All right, back after this on the Dan Patrick Show. Simply Safe Home Security. Can't forget that. Simple to set up, absolutely safe, and it is secure. Simply Safe Home Security, everything you need to protect your home. None of the drawbacks of traditional home security. And when you think about this, you go, okay, hey, is there a contract to sign? No. How much does it cost? $15 a month. Is this 24/7 protection? Yes. No hidden fees. You set it up in less than an hour. Professional monitoring. They're there day and night, ready to send the police, fire, medical professionals if there's an emergency. And if you don't believe me, and you should, U.S. News & World Report said Simply Safe is, quote, best overall home security of 2020. Try Simply Safe today at simplysafedan.com. Get free shipping, 60-day risk-free trial, so there's nothing to lose instead, except for everything you have when you think about it. Simplysafedan.com. Simplysafedan.com, and tell them we sent you. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. No better rock and roll drummer than John Bonham. None. Like, you start with John Bonham, and then you start to list the top drummers in rock and roll history. All right, this program, it's an award-nominated program. We don't win awards, but we get nominated. Brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Be prepared for whatever comes your way. It's the all-new GT four-door coupe, because life is a race. Visit your local dealership for a test drive today. If you missed any of our interviews from the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, go to danpatrick.com. Watch and listen from inside the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, where I rain jumpers out there on the basketball court. Mercedes-AMG, driving performance. Brian Scalabrine, the White Mamba, Celtics analyst for NBCSN and co-host of Scal and Pal's Daily Podcast, joining us on the program after the Celtics go up 2-0 on the Raptors. Surprised, Brian?
Yeah, actually, I really am. I thought the backcourt of the Celtics, you think about Brown, Tatum, Walker, I thought those guys would have a good series. I thought they would be a lot better than the Toronto backcourt. But I really thought that Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, former defensive player of the year, these guys are champions. I didn't think that they would be outplayed by Robert Williams and Daniel Tice, or even Grant Williams for that matter. And the Celtic bigs have really done a great job. And Marcus Smart really won that game. His contributions offensively are always a bonus in Boston. And he's shooting the ball like that, man. It's going to be a long series for Toronto.
What about Gordon Hayward's availability?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play this series, Dan. I think the best guess is for him to play into the Eastern Conference Finals. There's also another caveat to this. I think his wife is having a baby. She's due around mid-September. So even if he was to get back, you know, the bubble is a really interesting place, because you don't just walk on campus and all of a sudden be cleared to play. There's quarantine and stuff like that. He would have to leave for the birth of his son, and then have to get back and do the whole quarantine all over again. So I'm not sure he'll be in the series. I think for the Celtics, is moving forward to if they get past Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals.
We brought this up a couple of weeks ago, and I said, if you're looking at the young tandems in the NBA, and you look at Tatum and Brown in Boston, you look at Luka and Kristaps in Dallas. I don't know if there's another one that comes to mind. We talked about Embiid and Simmons in Philadelphia. But if you were going to pick the best tandem out of those three teams?
You know, I think I would go with, you know, I really like Luka. I think he's going to be an all-time great player. I just don't think that Porzingis, with the injury history, is good enough. So I think I would take the versatile wings of Boston, because no matter who you put around them, those guys can defend multiple positions. Jaylen Brown can guard a 1-4. Jason Tatum, with his size and strength, can guard a 1-4. So it would be easier to build a team off of having two versatile wings that can shoot the ball, score it, and defend their position. So I would go that direction. One interesting caveat of this would be Giannis and DiVincenzo. I don't know. Giannis is such a dominant force.
No. Dante DiVincenzo, no.
Well, I just had to throw someone in there that was young, you know. But no. With Giannis is such a dynamic player, that, and he's so young as well. But no, I think the Boston, it would be the easiest team to build around if you had Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. It'd be the easiest way to build a championship team, because you could add pretty much a lot of different pieces to that, and those guys would fit in.
How long were you on the Celtics with Paul Pierce?
5 years.
When did you start to understand or realize that he really hated LeBron James? Or there was a real issue between those two?
Yeah, I think so when I got there, we weren't good the first 2 years. And I think as soon as Kevin Garnett got there, it became, and we don't get this a lot in today's NBA, it became us against the world mentality. Like, you either are with us or we hate you, you know, like, and so I think that's when this whole thing started. And I feel like Pierce was having Garnett behind him. It made it a much different fight when you're fighting going against LeBron. Before that, I mean, it wasn't, we just weren't very good. I mean, it was hard to have that rivalry with LeBron if you're not matching up in the playoffs.
But Paul still has a problem with LeBron.
That's old school generation. You know how that is. I mean, Michael Jordan still has a problem with Isaiah Thomas. So it's just the way it was back then. No one's hugging it out.
Yeah, but LeBron didn't do anything to Paul Pierce except for beat him.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I can't think of anything in particular.
I mean, Isaiah may have kept, or, you know, Mike and Isaiah, they had that feud go, you know, for, they beat him up. And then Mike says, I don't want you on the dream team. Or I'm going to, I mean, that's deep stuff. I don't know if Paul Pierce and LeBron ever had a moment where, because it really bothers LeBron. He won't even acknowledge LeBron. I think, Paul doesn't acknowledge him as a top five player of all time.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It does, and I think Paul's a good analyst. That does seem a little sour grapes. Maybe there's the Ray Allen element to it. I don't know, but you're right about that, Dan. Because even like Magic and Bird, as much as they disliked each other early, they were cool with each other. And now, as retired players, and I know LeBron is still playing, but Pierce is past that. You would think that they would be all good with it, and Pierce would recognize, you know, the duel or, you know, how great LeBron is. But that's a good point by you.
But what happened with Ray Allen? Was it just because he went to the enemy and he joined LeBron and that was it?
Yeah. I mean, Dan, you know how the old school guys are, man. But first of all, another thing about the NBA back in the day was people found reasons to hate other people. It wasn't the opposite where they inherently like them to begin with, and then they find reasons to hate them. Like, initially, you just found reasons to create, you know, I guess drama or a controversy. But you know who's the best at that, as you saw in The Last Dance? Michael Jordan. All he looked for different random reasons of why he can end up hating somebody, and insignificant people at times. But that's the old school way. I think Garnett was like that. Pierce was like that. Jeez, Kendrick Perkins is like that. There's a lot of guys that are like that.
He's Brian Scalabrine, the White Mamba, the Celtics analyst for NBCSN Boston. Did you ever talk to Kobe, since he was the original Mamba, the Black Mamba? Was he okay with you being the White Mamba?
Yeah, so he sort of quote unquote endorsed me on Twitter, and that was it. So I, like, he came out on social media. I followed like a week later, kind of with a pun tweet. Like, he said, the antisocial goes social. I said, this Mamba waited longer than that Mamba, and he hit me with a welcome to Twitter, White Mamba. And I went from, like, Dan, I went from 4,000 followers to 80,000 followers in like 4 hours. I couldn't believe it. So, and then on the last game, you know, we had a cool little moment where, you know, like, we did the whole shake and pound and we went on our merry way, unspoken.
Hug.
Bro hug.
But you never got isolated on him, did you? Like, did you guard?
Yeah, actually, good. I always bring this up because when you can prepare for NBA players, you can watch their last 50 clips. You can just ask the film guy and they'll deliver it for you, right? And it was amazing. Most guys, they do about 5 to 7 things. Most people, you know, and there's all about the same move. I watched Kobe's last 50 makes, and I think it was 45 different shots. And then I told the film guy, I need another 50 makes. And I think it was another like 40 different shots. Then we got in the game. I guarded him. And I think he went left, 1 foot runner. And of his last 100 makes, I didn't see that shot taken once. He just had such an arsenal of different ways to beat you. I think he was probably the greatest shot creator or tough shot maker to ever play this game.
But how often are guys watching film?
Oh, a lot.
Regular season.
It's so easy. Dan, it's like for you to watch a guy's last 100 makes, it takes around 15 minutes. It's amazing what you can learn in 15 minutes when it's cut up for you, not when you have to watch an entire game and Kobe would take 25 shots in that game. No, I'm talking about you can get the last 2 or 3 weeks, matter of it's really easy to prepare that way.
But do players have tells? Like, a pitcher can sometimes, yeah, you know, they can be telling you what the pitch is without even knowing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, remember a great scorer, Tracy McGrady?
Yeah.
Tracy McGrady had about three or four things that he did, and they all sort of set up the same way. And it was amazing when you study it and you see it and you're in the game, how much everything sort of slows down.
But you couldn't stop him.
No. You couldn't stop him, but you could get back into his airspace a little bit quicker. Listen, Dan, I wasn't going to stop anybody anyways. He just gave me a better chance of stopping him.
What was your proudest defensive moment?
NBA Finals, Lamar Odom. He's destroyed us at every end of quarter in 2010. And Doc Rivers, I haven't played in like 2 months. Doc Rivers, for whatever reason, put me in the game. And I had to pick him up full court. I turned him a couple times. I made him like semi turn it over, and we got a stop. And he had destroyed us at the end of quarters. It was Rasheed, Garnett, Big Baby, whoever was out there. He has got to the basket, and that was probably like my greatest defensive stop in obviously game 7 of the NBA Finals.
If the Rockets lose tonight.
Wow. You know, what's funny is they gave up so much to get Russell Westbrook, and they gave up Chris Paul. And Chris Paul has been unbelievable for Oklahoma City. They got assets, Oklahoma City did, and they go all in on this duo. And if it doesn't work, I don't know what happens to D'Antonio. I don't know what happens to Daryl Morey. I don't know what happens to the Rockets. Remember their owner, Tillman Fertitta. He's in the restaurant business. As you know, right now, that restaurant business is not doing well. So I think a lot of things are come into play based off the outcome of this game.
Yeah, I wonder. It feels like Mike D'Antoni is coaching for his job tonight. I think it's.
I'm not sure he wants to be there, Dan. I'm not sure. It might be a two-way street. I'm not sure it's a one-way street where the guys don't want him back. I'm not sure he wants to be there.
Why?
I don't know, because when they offered him the $5 million extension, he just turned it down. He said, like, no way, like, no problem. Plus, there's been links to him being in Indiana. Then they got rid of Nate McMillan, and right away the name you hear is Mike D'Antoni. Maybe he just wants to change the scenery. You know, in coaching, it's not always like – it's always like, oh, this is a bad coach, this is a good coach. Sometimes timing comes into play. Sometimes your voice grows stale and you just need a new guy to come in. No disrespect to that coach, and the next coach coming in might not even be as good of a coach as Mike D'Antoni, but it could work because it's new and it's fresh. And I think that happens a lot in the NBA.
How often did Doc Rivers yell at you in Boston?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Oh, not on the championship years. I was like the 13th man, the 12th man. It was more about, you know, I'll tell you one thing Doc did every year is he would sit the team down somewhere 5 or 7 games into the season and establish everyone's role. Your role is this. Your role is this. Kevin Garnett, we need more from you. Ray Allen, you need to do this. Paul Pierce, you need to do that. And I've never seen a coach or been a part of a coaching staff that just was so direct like that and calling guys out and saying, this is what we need from you and we all need to sacrifice. And that team, and Doc has the biggest pulse on his team more than any coach I've ever been a part of. He understands what players are thinking during the course of an 82 game season or a playoff run or whatever it is.
Well, what was your role? Did he say, and no. Brian, I need.
No, just catch and shoot. Like he would make it simple and then he'd move on to the next guy. So it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't. I think it was more about telling, you know, Dan, there's a lot of money at stake with NBA players. And to tell a player you're not going to do X, Y, and Z, we only want you to do one thing. You're getting that player to sacrifice, you know, the greater good of his own financial rewards. And to get a guy to do that and to have you run through a wall for a guy that's asking you to make sacrifices, that's not an easy thing to do.
So you made sacrifices that
for the betterment.
Is that what you're saying?
I was just happy to be there.
And Garnett would always – he was such a great trash talker, wasn't he?
Him and Pierce together were the greatest duo of trash talkers. They would play off each other. They would have – it would be like if me and you were talking and we were talking about a guy who was sitting like, you know, 2 feet away and we were talking about how like that person shouldn't even be here right now. I don't know why he's on the show. How does he have a job? How did he make it in this world? Like what were your parents like? Me and you communicating about this guy – And it took some NBA players a while to realize, like, wait a minute,
they're talking about me. Well, Tim Duncan would always tell me that Garnett tried to get in his head, and Tim drove him crazy because Tim wouldn't allow Kevin Garnett to get into his head.
Correct. And I'll tell you another guy, Dirk Nowitzki, he would never back down from Garnett. And I liked how Like a lot of players would melt, and Dirk would bring it his level up when Garnett would start trash talking to Dirk.
What would he say to Dirk?
I don't know what they were when they were guarding each other. What was being said? But I know like Dirk was about that life. He was like he liked the challenges of you know the 82 game grind. Kevin Garnett comes in, and you know it's not just a normal game on a Wednesday night. Like Kevin Garnett made the level higher, and Dirk it woke Dirk up, saying like, "All right, I'm about this." And I will say this: early Dirk was very different. Like once he lost to the Warriors, I think he became a different guy, and he was like very tough to stop, very mentally tough, very he wanted the smoke, as we would say in the NBA. He was about that.
Good to visit with you, Brian. Appreciate you joining us. Hope you're well.
You got it, too. Be safe, Dan. See you.
That's Brian Scalabrine, Celtics analyst for NBCSN in Boston. And the White Mamba, he's got a podcast called Scal and Pals. He's always fun because he's got stories. And you know what? It helps when you have a self-deprecating sense of humor there to know who you are, what your role was. But to be there and have one of the great seats for what happened with the Celtics. And I mean, Paul Pierce has made this personal with LeBron James. LeBron hasn't made it personal with Paul Pierce, I don't think. But Paul, to be an analyst, you must be objective. And this isn't where you're on with Stephen A. Smith or, you know, First Take, or you're on with Skip Bayless where you can have a little bit of fun. You know, you're an analyst and you got to act that way. And there are times when he goes out of his way to say something about LeBron James. And it is personal, but, you know, is it personal just because LeBron was getting the better of you for the most part? You don't even have LeBron as one of your top five players of all time. We'll take a break. Last call for phone calls. We'll close up shop. What we learn and what's in store tomorrow right after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. Well, Fritzy got his bagel. Got onion bagels. He's making his bagel out there in the kitchen, and I got his favorite cream cheese, so everything is good. He was in a bad way when he couldn't get his onion bagel the last week, so we got him some onion bagels, and he's actually putting it together. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if he's used a toaster before, but Todd is, if you're watching on Peacock, you're going to see Todd putting the schmear, as they like to say. Oh, he's actually eating the bagel. So I don't think Todd's coming back yet. Yes, Seton.
Yeah, I don't blame him. It looks like he goes bite for bite with the... He applies cream cheese
to each
with
bite.
Each bite.
Individual yeah. bite, yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting, too, because then he's sticking that same
yeah, no,
knife
I know.
In there. So that like that tempty is just his, because he's essentially double-dipped five times now.
Yeah. Final results of the poll question there, McLovin.
Okay, whose career would you want? Keanu Reeves, Liam Neeson, or Bruce Willis? Keanu wins... Bruce Willis second, and nobody voted for our guy Liam Neeson, but he's going to get them back because he has a particular set of skills.
Okay, those movies bother me.
What, Taken?
Yes, Taken bothers me because, first of all, he doesn't seem like a good parent. And there's one, I don't know which one it is, where he is on the highway and there's 50 car crashes and no one dies. Like, it's just, they're just all these car crashes. And he's always losing his daughter. Like, if my daughter was going over to have a sleepover at his daughter's house, I'd go, no, no. If he shows up at the door, I go, no, no, you're not going to stay over here. Something bad's going to happen. Yes, Paulie.
And in the first Taken, he, you know, burns a bunch of Albanian guys. And for Taken 2, he takes a family vacation, not to Wisconsin Dells. He goes to, like, Kazakhstan. You take a family vacation, you're international target. Hey, how about going down to, Branson, Missouri or something? Yeah. Somewhere safe.
Todd, how was the cream cheese, the bagel?
It was fantastic. The onion bagel was great. Thank you for the kindness. The tempty cream cheese was the perfect way to go with that bagel. I'm very happy.
Well, great. I'm glad because you were in a bad way.
I wasn't a bad way. I'm in a good way now.
That's good. I'm glad. Now, when you're growing up, there's always that athlete that you see. And you go, he's just different, larger than life. And one of those athletes growing up, he played for Kings high school, Kings Mill. His name was Jim Testerman. And he was a great football, baseball, basketball player. He was a guy, he would palm the basketball. He'd hold it out and palm it before that was in vogue. He went to the University of Dayton, played basketball. I believe he was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys as a tight end. Jim Testerman. He just passed away. And he was, I played against his brother. His two brothers. And Don and Ed. But Jim Testerman passed away, a former University of Dayton basketball player. And he was one of those larger-than-life figures. So, let's see. This day in sports history, what do you have for me,
1973, Paulie? Dan, Billy Martin was fired as the manager of the Detroit Tigers. Martin was relieved of his duties 3 days after ordering his pitchers to throw spitballs against the Cleveland Indian batters. Old school. That's great. 2003, Eric Gagne of the Dodgers established a major league record with his 55th consecutive save.
And then his arm fell off.
Not literally.
No, no. But, yeah, he blew out his arm after that. Let me see. I saw where Michael Jordan has taken an equity stake in DraftKings. He's an advisor for DraftKings. Okay. There we go. Sports betting, fantasy sports company. He will provide guidance and strategic advice to DraftKings board of directors. All right. Well. So that was this day in sports history. Nothing else, Paulie?
That's it.
Okay. Let me see. Jake in Buffalo. Hey, Jake, what do you have for me today?
Hey, DC, first time, long time, 5'10", 195. I just wanted to say that shows like yesterday are why I think that this is the best show there is. You talk about sports, but you also go into the other aspects of life. I'm going on to month 6 of working from home with my daughter, who's under 2, so some days get a little tough. You talking about your daughters growing up yesterday gave me some new perspective. I just think it's great that you guys are always there, you and the Danette, something to always look forward to and need an escape. And it's also a teaching show. That segment with Todd cutting a bagel, we'll use that to tell her the correct way to do it.
Thank you, Jake. That's not the correct way to do it, by the way, but thank you, Jake.
Yeah, that's scary if you're going to get tips from me on how to do anything in the kitchen.
Yes, yeah,
what was wrong with the way Todd cut that bagel? Honestly, I probably would have cut it the exact same way.
Well, the hand behind it, I was worried with Todd.
Well, so, you can't put it in front of it.
Well, no, but I would have put it down on the cutting board and used the cutting board, not my hand.
See, I would have done it exactly the same way, because if you put it on the cutting board, it comes out crooked. It's going to come out like slanted or something.
No, you just put it, you know, like this, and then you cut it down like this, and then the cutting board is at the bottom of it. You know, it might work for you, but Todd with a knife?
I thought there was a slight chance I'd have to be rushed to the medical center for some stitches.
Yeah, that's not the way to cut a bagel. Todd, it's not the way to cut a bagel. What we learned brought to you by LegalZoom. You can start online. Network of independent attorneys providing advice when you need it the most. And since LegalZoom isn't a law firm, you don't have to leave your home. Visit LegalZoom.com today for more information. Thanks for joining us. Our pleasure to serve you. All the folks watching on Peacock and listening on our great radio affiliates, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on The Dan Patrick Show.